Hey, Corey here. We've had an influx of new listeners, and so I just want to make sure that if you are new to the podcast, you don't just jump in and start listening to these daily episodes, which we've been doing. Please go back and listen to the first at least 8 episodes so you have an idea of what Collapse is, what it is that Corey is talking about. Also, if you've been with us for a while and you're enjoying the content, please join us on Patreon. We would love to see you there. There's a link, as always, in the description. Okay, hello, happy Friday, everyone. Today's episode might be a little bit shorter than my normal Friday episodes are. I'm still in the hotel room. I am exhausted and don't have a ton of time to record and edit this. So we'll just kind of jump right in. I've got a good selection here of articles to go over from happenings this week that are specific to the way that fascism is progressing in the United States. First, an article from The Guardian that talks about how the U.S. Justice Department has now released less than 1% of the Epstein files filing reveals. Subheading says that federal law required majority of documents to be released by the 19th of December, but only 125,575 pages have been published, which is wild to believe that that is only less than 1% of the total number of files. But essentially, the Trump administration released some files over the course of a week or two and just left it at that. Those files were completely redacted. Not much information could be gleaned from them. They were redacted in the wrong ways and not redacted in the ways they were supposed to be. And the other 99% of all of those files continue to remain hidden. However, the Justice Department is doing work in other ways, doing things like opening criminal probes or investigations into Jerome Powell. If you've been paying attention to the economic situation in the U.S. and inflation, Jerome Powell has been consistently sort of saying that it's essential that the Fed remains neutral, apolitical, and independent, notwithstanding whoever is in office. He says that for the good of the economy and to reduce inflation, they have to be very careful about reducing the interest rates. And Donald Trump has been pushing him and threatening him and all of these things, calling him names, to try and get him to cave and lower interest rates faster. It is, of course, preferential by any president to have the lowest interest rates possible because it means especially short-term economic gain and gives the appearance of prosperity. But in the long term, that can be highly detrimental. And so, for this reason, it is important that the Federal Reserve remain independent and not take any pressure from the administration. Well, the Justice Department has now opened this criminal probe for freaking what? I don't know. And Jerome Powell released this statement basically saying, I will continue to do the job that I've been confirmed to do. It is my job to serve the American people, saying that, this probe is unjustified. Anyway, I'll link to it so you can check that out. Trump was asked this week, do you see any checks on your power on the world stage? Is there anything that could stop you? He says, yeah, there's one thing, my own morality, my own mind. It's the only thing that can stop me. The response said, not international law. And Trump said, I don't need international law. It's just more and more of this sort of rhetoric and trying to normalize from Trump the idea that, he's immortal, he's untouchable, and, he can do whatever he wants. Moving into the sort of policing side of things, we're going to talk here a little bit about ICE. But before jumping into ICE, this article says that a cop used Flock, we've talked about Flock in the past, it's a surveillance system, to wrongfully accuse a woman, then refuse to look at evidence that exonerated her, shows his body camera. And I just found this one interesting based on the idea that Flock is continuing to be used by police forces. It is a AI surveillance tool that can track your vehicle based on tons of different things, not only your license plate, but other, unique features of the vehicle, of yourself, whatever it may be. And these are becoming quite prevalent around the U.S. and around the world. We've seen many municipalities sort of fighting back on this, but obviously it still persists. And this is a tool that the government will continue to use and something to keep an eye on. Use one of the Flock trackers that you can find online that kind of helps show where at least some of those cameras have been recorded, in your area.
All right, moving on from there, jumping into some of the stuff with ICE and the Department of Justice basically stating this week that they are not going to investigate at all the ICE agent who killed Renee Good in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Instead, they're going to investigate her and her widow, her partner, for their acts of supposed domestic terrorism. Because of this, six top Department of Justice officials resign. These folks were obviously very upset about the injustice of the Justice Department's actions here, of being unable to actually do an independent and thorough investigation, and they quit. Now, on the one hand, you might say, yeah, I'd love to see it. You know, what a great act of protest. But at the same time, if all the good ones quit, who is left? Only those that will do what Donald Trump says. Only those that will further his cause, be loyal to him, and it will completely gut the Department of Justice of any independence. Vanita Gupta, who led the division during the Obama administration, told the Post, "It is highly unusual for the Civil Rights Division not to be involved from the outset with the FBI and U.S. Attorney's Office. I cannot think of another high-profile federal agent shooting case like this when the Civil Rights Division was not involved. Its prosecutors have the long-standing expertise in such cases." The article, this is in Common Dreams, goes on to say that hundreds of attorneys in the Civil Rights Division have resigned since President Donald Trump began his second term a year ago. Stacey Young, a former division attorney who left the DOJ soon after Trump was inaugurated, told NPR that the division is not an arm of the White House. So I'll copy the link to this one in the description, but man, how terrifying is it that the corruption continues so blatantly in our faces, and we're watching this resignation, this mass resignation, which will continue to gut the Department of Justice into the future. Meanwhile, you have J.D. Vance and Stephen Miller both saying that this agent and other agents are protected by absolute immunity. The Homeland Security Twitter page posted this: "Reminder to all ICE officers, you have federal immunity in the conduct of your duties. Anybody who lays a hand on you or tries to stop you or tries to obstruct you is committing a felony. You have immunity to perform your duties, and no one, no city official, no state official, no illegal alien, no leftist agitator or domestic insurrectionist can prevent you from fulfilling your legal obligations and duties. The Department of Justice has made clear that if officials cross that line into obstruction, into criminal conspiracy against the United States or against ICE officers, then they will face justice." And Stephen Miller was tagged there, meaning that this most likely came from him. Many people point out that even if this was true and that ICE officers themselves had immunity, Stephen Miller most definitely does not. He is not an elected official. He's ridden Trump's coattails to where he is. And if ever there is a day in which justice can be served, Stephen Miller will be on the receiving end. Meanwhile, the state of Minnesota and the state of Illinois are both suing the Trump administration for their actions. I've read things from legal advisors or consultants basically saying that this probably won't do anything in the end. It might mostly be performative, but it currently, you know, sort of acts as those states' response to what is happening. I heard this on the radio driving to work, and there's an article about it in The Guardian. It says, "Anti-Trump U.S. reporter says she was offered job at ICE after minimal vetting. Slate journalist Laura Jadid documented hiring process and said she got offered despite not completing paperwork." So basically, from her interview, the way she explained it was that she randomly received in her email a tentative offer, which, number one, she said is odd because she is a leftist journalist and she believes they perhaps made a mistake. But having received this tentative offer, she thought, hey, why not? Let's see where this goes. It didn't seem out of the realm for her simply because she had heard that they were desperate in getting ICE agents and they were throwing, you know, these offers around. It probably, a list had been made of people based on certain qualifications or something like that, and hers was simply received in error. Nonetheless, she had missed the deadline by the time she saw the email. They said she had 2 days or something to complete the paperwork. She did not complete the paperwork, and she still got another email a couple weeks later telling her, essentially, that she should move on to the next step of the application, that congratulations, and that she should submit the next bit of paperwork with doing a drug test and those types of things. She did. She did the drug test, and she knew that she was going to fail the drug test because she had, within the last week, consumed marijuana, which was not legal in the state of New York where she resided. She later logged into the portal to find out, you know, what they had to say about it and just see what was going on, and she found that they had accepted her despite the fact that she had likely failed the drug test.
The portal did not say anything about her having failed the drug test, meaning they likely just ignored it. They are desperate. They have been given a huge amount of money, $170 billion so far, as a budget for ICE to recruit and give bonuses, to incentivize, and it appears that they are hiring anybody, regardless of whether or not they pass background checks or drug tests, and they are clearly not doing well at even vetting who it is that they are inviting. They're giving them no more than 47 days of training. Do you know why they picked 47 days of training? Because President Trump is the 47th president of the United States. It should be months and months of training before putting them out in front of the public. And yet they picked this arbitrary number in honor of President Trump, and because they need to hurry. They feel they need more people on the streets now. In reaction to all of this Renee Good backlash, they are sending up to 2,000 to 3,000 more units to the state over the course of the next few days. I'm recording this on Wednesday evening, Wednesday the 14th of January. Just today, we've had a very big escalation in the U.S.-Iran threats. Iran, who has reportedly killed 12,000 protesters. I've seen numbers ranging from 2,000 to 12,000. It seems like there's not a lot of confidence in those numbers necessarily because we're not getting great data out of Iran. Trump has threatened to react if they were to continue to do this, if there were to be public hangings. There has apparently been public hangings. Now suddenly there's all this stuff with people putting in hundreds of thousands of dollars into poly market bets that the, you know, attack is going to happen in the next 24 hours. Many people say, oh, well, that's got to be an insider. Who knows? Because there has been this sort of insider trading or insider betting happening recently. And for someone to put down, you know, $100,000+, then they have to know something. And the pizza index is going through the roof and all these different things. Meanwhile, you've got Iran shutting down their airspace, neighboring Iraq shutting down theirs, and then they're opening it back up and they're shutting it back down again. You've got Chinese aircraft flying into Iranian airspace. All these odd sort of things that are happening. Donald Trump then, just a couple of hours ago, tweeted out saying that he wants swift and decisive, I believe were the words, action taken against Iran. He wants all options on the table. And he seeks to do it soon. Basically saying, I don't want a long, drawn-out war. He wants to do what he did in Venezuela. I don't know if it would be simply decapitating leadership or if he would wish to strike more, you know, military targets, do something drastic to end their military or their nuclear programs, their ability to retaliate. I don't know. I don't know how thorough he is talking about being. Iran has vowed retaliation, vowing to strike Israel, vowing to strike Qatar. But the truth is, we've heard this from Iran many times, and their retaliations have been minimal. Perhaps they have the ability to do greater, you know, counterattacks. But the truth is, if the U.S. were to attack with its military prowess, with its military might, there is not much Iran would likely be able to do in response. Many articles online are saying that U.S. military intervention in Iran may begin within 24 hours. This is according to European officials. Well, by the time you are hearing this, you will obviously know whether or not within these 24 hours it did happen. This will be one of those situations in which absolutely nothing happened and you know, we're still waiting to see if it will. Or you could be saying, oh, Corey, you have no idea what's happened in the last, you know, 36 hours. I hope it's not that option, but we will see. Meanwhile, Trump continues to threaten Greenland. He has ordered his top army officials to draw up a plan to invade Greenland. This is, you know, something that was mentioned or announced a couple of days ago. There have also been reports that top military officials essentially told the president, no, Mr. President, we can't do this. This is a terrible idea. This is not something that we advise doing. And I don't know how strong the no was, but it seemed to be like, we're not going to put together a plan for you to do this. In whatever way they felt comfortable saying that to the president. However, it appears that he is still insisting, and today's meeting between J.D. Vance and Denmark apparently did not go well. They, Greenland and Denmark, both say that Trump is set on conquering their territory after today's meeting. I've read some assessments and, you know, some ideas of what might happen should the U.S. actually use military power in an attempt to take Greenland, and it's bleak, right?
nobody knows exactly what will happen. These, again, were just things of what ideas of what could happen. But it could spell drastic and rapid military and economic consequences. It could unleash a rapid global sort of decoupling of the peace. And I mean, it's hard to say peace, right? We don't have peace, but we have relative peace. The consequences globally that it would have for nations like Russia and China, who are all attempting or wanting to attempt to grab land, the U.S. surging forward with that and the signal that that would send, the redistribution of power, mainly because one of the ideas is that if this were to happen, NATO would, to put it simply, remove U.S. military bases throughout Europe. Now, remove bases is a lot more difficult said than done, but those tens of thousands of troops throughout Europe could be isolated, under siege, and in time, those military bases essentially neutralized. What does that do? How does that destabilize the power dynamic throughout the world? The economic impacts of Europe calling in the U.S. debt, of dumping their dollar reserves, right? And the effects that would have on the U.S. dollar, you know, being the reserve currency. What that would do to inflation. Going on from there, what it would do to any U.S. companies that operate globally. If the U.S. overnight became a pariah in that way, if NATO and all of the former U.S. allies turn against the U.S. and U.S. companies are dumped, right? Subscriptions canceled, contracts terminated, tourists ejected, visas canceled. If U.S. individuals essentially became pariahs around the world. I'll post a link to this post where I read some of this. I've seen several different assessments, but this one was particularly grim, perhaps hyperbolic, perhaps talking about things in a way that would be too fast or too swift, and reality is always stranger than fiction. But it just gives an idea, an example of what we might see, and I found it fascinating. All right, I'll end with a couple of wins. I always put wins, you know, with an asterisk, because many times these wins are simply temporary, but judges continue to rule against Trump, at least federal judges or local judges. Supreme Court, well, we're still waiting for them to do what they need to do. But one example of that this week is that the court rules that Trump cannot force citizenship proof for mail-in registrations. Trump has tried very hard to make voting, you know, mail-in voting especially, very difficult, and in ways that especially hurt his political opposition. Court in this case is saying that no, you cannot force proof of citizenship to do a mail-in registration, because guess what? You've already enrolled to vote before you register for mail-in voting. You've already proven your citizenship. You should not have to do it twice. And lastly, the university that fired a professor who made a Charlie Kirk post, has to pay him $500,000. Austin Peay State University in Tennessee also reinstated Darren Michael, a tenured acting professor, whose post about Mr. Kirk's killing inflamed conservatives. Hopefully we continue to see anyone who was fired over a post that they made on social media get retribution and bilk those companies dry. All right. Sorry, mentioned this was going to be quick this week. I'm sure there was more that I missed. We'll have plenty to cover next week, especially as we, you know, see if any of these international conflicts escalate. I hope you're doing well. I hope you're staying safe. God bless. Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.